It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
Ball came in to Bogdanovich. Robert Williams is closest to him. And he just didn't have time to get a good look, so maybe went a little too soon. Joseph swatted at the rebound, but he swatted it over everything. And that is the final margin. The Celtics are back home and back in the win column. They go to 6-0 at the Garden as they hold off the Kings by a final of 103-102.
So there's the final call last night. You didn't hear it there, I don't think. Bogdanovich misses a three-pointer at the buzzer, and the Celtics go on to win.
So just quickly, because I know this is not the focus of the conversation, you know what Bogdanovich's first name is?
Asshat? I hated watching that guy.
Bogdanovich. It is the Slovakian or Slavic equivalent of Cameron. That's what it is. Bogdan Bogdanovich. Holy crap, they're even doing it over there? Anyway, go. That's comical to me.
I got sick of watching that guy dribble around. Hold the ball. The two items off yesterday's Celtics game, okay? Item number one, we are back to the Marcus Smart night. This was another Marcus Smart night.
He was huge down the stretch of this game.
Good and not as... We could re-rack the same Marcus Smart topic we did last week today, except the difference is the shots went in.
Correct.
But it was the same thing.
And this is Gasper's point, right? About making the shots. But go ahead.
This is the same thing, though. In this ball game, he's flopping around on the other side, drawing a foul, has a couple key shots late, has a real big steal at the very end of the ball game. The last two offensive possessions for the Celtics, two before, there was a Jason Tatum air ball. That was their last one, I think. But the two before that was Marcus Smart, little jumper at the free throw line, Marcus Smart driving, little runner for two. So, you know, your last 4 points were Marcus Smart shots where I go back and watch. Everyone just sort of stands around. Like, they're not running a play for Tatum. Tatum isn't working to get open. Everyone's just sort of standing around to let Marcus do the Marcus thing.
Yeah, but I think that's good Marcus. Last night, the last two games really is the kind of Marcus Smart I want to see. Especially because it's not hero ball, at least from beyond
it's
the arc.
Not?
And not from beyond the arc. That's so, the only thing I really want cleaned up.
That's a big difference for me. He took shots inside of 15 feet.
Okay, they weren't three-pointers. They were ball dominant. I'm taking the shot. I'm taking the ball. Everyone else is cleared out, doing nothing, standing around. It was all Marcus Smart.
I trust him in those situations, though. It's when he feels like he's got to be chucking up bomb after bomb after bomb is where I want to lose my mind. I feel like in these last couple of games, he's had a stern talking to by Brad Stevens and the coaching staff because he's attempted a total of 6 threes in the last two games. That's what I want to see from Marcus Smart.
Okay, the threes were down, but it was still him with those were key shots.
They were. He made them, though.
Those were key shots. Those. They were, I think, at one of them you were down a point, the other you were tied. Minute
right.
left, 30 seconds left.
Yep.
And he's the one taking the shots, and Jason Tatum is just standing there on the wing. Like, there's still something not right about that. I don't know.
Go ahead. They play mismatch. So if Bogdanovich is the guy guarding Smart, they're going to back his ass in.
I'm not sure he was. I'm not sure. He wasn't on the runner. I mean, there was a switch on the runner. He almost charged. So we're showing him there that Bogdanovich wasn't on him on the free throw jumper. And on the next one, on the runner, no, it switched from Hield to someone else. Bogdanovich wasn't anywhere near him.
So Hield is another guy you would attack, though.
Okay, Hield's not great defense. All I'm saying is, it's like coming out of a timeout, there's no way Brad would draw it up for Marcus Smart. He'd draw it up for Tatum like he did on the bad three-pointer. I'm not saying it was a good shot. I'm just saying when the bullets are flying in the flow of the action, Brad just lets Marcus go and do Marcus, for better or worse. And I'm a big Marcus guy, but I'm just saying, if we're being fair, the only difference is he shot from closer in.
Yeah, see, and
but it was the same thing of him taking over offensively. Jason Tatum nowhere near the ball in those key spots, and Marcus being the option. Like, that is that really your best option?
I give this a caveat because, again, if he's inside of 15 feet, if he's, you know, basically foul line and in,
yes,
he's good in there. Because he's strong, he can create space. So he's good in there. On those twos, he's pretty good. He's 50% or more. Like, I'll take my chances on. I don't mind those. I don't want him hucking it up from 28 feet. I just don't think he's that guy. So, now look, ideally, because remember, he had the shot in Sacramento, too, that just rolled off the rim. But at least that one was, again, 15 feet. Right. It was, you know, inside of 15 feet. So, those in there, I feel like he can get those shots off and make them because he's so strong.
All right,
but anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so that's one thing. The Marcus Smart problem. The Marcus Smart problem. It was back last night. I'm sorry, and it worked out. The ball this time, instead of wherever that was, where was the ball you were just talking about where it just dribbled off the rim?
In Sacramento.
Out west, it was in Sacramento, where the ball just dribbles off the rim.
This one rolled in.
This one bounced two or three times on the rim and just snuck over. But it's the same thing. Jason Tatum is standing out on the wing with his thumb up his ass, and Marcus Smart is taking the shot. It's like, is that, like, I don't know. That's not, you're the big Jason Tatum guy. You're saying he's got to be the next guy. If I were a Jason Tatum guy like you, I'd be pulling my hair out.
Well, so again, except that Tatum got the shot last night, what happened?
No, it was an air ball from the corner.
Holy crap, he missed by a mile. He missed by a mile. So again, look, I don't think Tatum's all the way there yet. Ideally, I'd like to see the ball in Tatum's hands. Okay, but Smart near the hoop is not a bad option. If it's near the hoop, of their three final buckets were all inside of 15 feet. Brown made one down there, and Smart made two, right? And then they had the breakaway where Smart got blocked, and that's the one that led to the Tatum miss, I think. So, you know, if they're shooting inside the paint, somewhere in that area, inside the free throw line, there's a lot of guys I'm okay with. If you're out on the wing deep, I want Tatum, I want Walker. That might be it.
I don't know. If you say it's all about Tatum, it's all about Tatum, it's all about Tatum.
Yeah, but I mean that in the big picture. I don't mean that on a nightly basis.
I thought this is where it starts. The minute left in the game, it's a one-possession game. It's tied. You're down a point. Those were the situations. And Marcus is just taking over, and Jason Tatum's standing there doing nothing. Like, I don't know. I'm more of a team guy. I am a Marcus Smart guy. But if you're a Tatum guy, it's all about him. Could they craft it a little bit more so you make sure you get him the ball and it's coached that way? Like I said, if they're coming out of timeout, they're not doing that. But that's item number one, the Marcus Smart problem. And boy, did he make a couple great defensive plays as usual.
Oh, man, a rebound that he drew a foul on and then the steal.
Yeah, it flopped and then the steal. Yeah.
Stole it from Bogdanovich.
Did the Marcus Smart thing.
Cam Cameron.
He's the Croatian Cam Cameron.
He is. Yeah, Bogdan.
I'm sorry.
Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Is he Croatian? I don't even know.
Probably.
Whatever.
Yeah. I say Slavic. That's how I cover it.
Okay. Who'd you rather have right now? Here's item number two. Basketball item number two. Jaylen Brown or Buddy Hield?
I'm Brown over Hield.
Me too.
Why?
Hield is your typical score first, score only guard. He's terrible defensively. He's like the mouthy little peanut on defense. He is.
Really?
Yeah, that's all he really is. And look, he got that extension for a reason. He can snipe, like Maz says, but that's it.
Okay, he's 6'4". I thought he was a little bit bigger than that. He averages 20 points a game, has the last couple of years.
He can really shoot. I mean, and that was true coming out of Oklahoma.
Jaylen Brown, his first 3 years average, 6, 14, and 13. Now he's up to 19 points this year. But Buddy Hield's a better scorer, is he not?
He is. He's also 3 years older.
And a much better shooter. Same draft year.
I know, but he came out as a senior.
Okay.
And he gives you nothing on the other end of the floor.
So he spent, you know, a lot of his development took place in college at Oklahoma. He played the full 4 years. He was a rarity in that way. He's one of those guys that came out as a senior and was closer to a finished product. So Hield can shoot. He's a little slow. The release feels to me like it's quicker than it was when he was in college because he needed space. But he can, to me, he's sort of your classic shooter.
Well, so you know me. Unlike everyone else who just wants to kiss Danny's ass, I sort of look for opportunities to actually treat him like every other GM and,
sure,
and second guess and analyze the moves in hindsight. And so I think that 2016 draft is interesting, you know, because I think there was portions there where you said Danny came out with the best player in the draft. And it felt that way after a couple of years. But now let me ask you, and I asked this to all of you guys, you know, pre-show, redraft the 2016 NBA draft, 2016. I'll just refresh for the audience. This is the year Ben Simmons went one overall. Ingram went two. Jaylen Brown went three. Then Buddy Hield went six. Jamal Murray to the Denver Nuggets went seven. Who else do we put on this list? This is Pascal Siakam went at the end of the first round, number 27, to Toronto. This is where Brogdon went to the Bucks in the second round. So I think those are really the big guys. Am I missing anyone that would?
No, I think you get the big ones.
So if I ask you to redraft that group, give me the draft order, please.
Murray, you want to go first or you want me to?
I'll go. Do you just want 1 to 5?
1 to 5.
All right. Number one for me is going to be Pascal Siakam, most improved player last year, number two guy on the NBA champion last year, and he's playing at that same level this year. I thought that team would drop off, and they're still there. The Raptors are for real, and it's because of him. So he's number one. I'm going Jamal Murray number two, then Ben Simmons, then Brandon Ingram, and then Jaylen Brown.
So you go Ingram over Jaylen Brown.
Look at his numbers. He's averaging 27 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists.
He's having a great year, Ingram is.
And that's, yeah, like he started slow when he came in, but he's actually pretty damn good.
Okay, so of those guys, Murray and Siakam were taken after Jaylen Brown. Maz, what's your list?
Simmons, Siakam, Brown.
Hold on, Simmons, Siakam. Yep.
Then Brown third, Murray and Ingram, and I have Hield sixth.
Murray, Ingram, Hield. Okay. So again, that's not a second-guessable list to me, because let me tell you where I come from. Siakam, I don't hold against anyone. I don't.
No, it's like the Giannis thing. Like, yeah. Who the hell saw that?
The whole league missed.
Yeah.
The whole league missed Pascal Siakam. So when to me, the second guesses are Buddy Hield or Jaylen Brown, Jamal Murray or Jaylen Brown. Someone that's taken in the top six?
Yeah.
Okay, now we can debate because they're all there for you. I can look at, you know, 2 year, or the, you know, I'm sorry, the next year, the year after that, it's Markelle Fultz and Jason Tatum. Boy, did the Sixers blow that. Blow. But, you know, but I can't go back and say Pascal Siakam at 27. Well, then, because I'm second guessing the entire league. Now, what made it worse for you is that you had three picks and you took Gerbershon at 16 and Zizic at 23. And Pascal Siakam was sitting there. So you had three cracks at him. So I want to give you a little. Can I give Danny second guess there?
You can absolutely do that.
Can I give him a little? I know it's really. I know I'm treading on really tough territory here today on this sainted, impeccable Danny Ainge.
Ante Zizic with those videos of him taking on the chairs.
Yes, he could dunk on a chair like you read about.
I think that was Dragon Bender, but same idea.
In the banquet hall where the bar mitzvah was on the other side of the divider. But. So you had three cracks at it that year. You had three, and you came up with Ubaselli and Zizic, and Pascal Siakam is sitting there. So I think you're a little second-guess worthy, but for the most part, I'm not going to second-guess Jaylen Brown versus Pascal Siakam because, okay, so the second guess is Hield or Murray or someone that was up there.
The other thing I hold against Hield is the age thing that you guys were kind of talking a little bit about. Because all these guys, while unpolished, like I'm not the biggest Simmons guy, but he is a playmaker. And if he works on the shutting a bit better, all these guys are like still 22, 23. They just turned that. Hield is 25 already, I think.
26. So,
oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, he is. He's 3 years older. So look, I like both. I like Hield. I like Murray. I like Ingram. I like them all. I just think that Brown still has the bigger upside. And that Brown can impact the game at both ends of the floor. Those other guys, I don't know. So if Brown doesn't pan out, well, then what good is it? It doesn't matter.
I like Jaylen Brown, too.
I mean,
he's almost there this year. But can we average 20 points a game?
Yeah, he's getting there, right? I mean, I think this year, actually, I forgot that he missed time there for a little bit. In the games that he's played, he's averaging like 19.
I just said it twice. 19.2.
Well, there you go. Listening.
It's okay.
So, you know, to me, he is. He's getting there. And again, he can give you something at both ends, whereas Hield and Murray, you know, Hield in particular, you're not going to get a ton at the defensive end. And he's 3 years older.
Okay, so there's your Celtics minute. The Jaylen Brown thing, that draft, I just think that's a fascinating group to reconsider. And the Marcus Smart problem, once again, appears last night. To you right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Fans on their feet. Williams looking to hand to Marcus Smart, does. 12 on the shot clock. Smart, right-hand dribble. They were trying to run that lob play. It's not there, so Smart takes a fall away, and it bounces in. 35 seconds to go. Smart, right hand dribble, spins, stumbles into Joseph. Runner off the glass is good. He just aimed that. Luke Walton calls timeout.
Does Marcus Smart have another huge defensive play in here? Boy, he's become one of the best two-way players right now in the NBA. Marcus is shaking his head like, yeah, you're not going to get it. Tatum on Buddy Hield. About this one.
Joseph will trigger the inbound. Bogdanović and Hield on the floor. Ball goes to Bogdanović. 30 seconds to go. Marcus Smart strips him clean, goes the distance, and gets hit from behind by Buddy Hield. It goes out of bounds. It will be Boston ball. There was no foul. Buddy Hield is calling for a replay, which will be automatically triggered. But Marcus Smart, clean steal from Bogdanović straight away.
So there's Marcus Smart's highlight reel at the end of that ball game, all in the last minute or so. You hear Max in there? One of the best two-way players in the NBA is what Max called Marcus Smart. One of the best two-way players in the NBA.
Are you surprised to hear that?
From Max, maybe. From Tommy, yeah. Look, I mean, of course. But are we putting him in that category?
No, no. Again, there's a lot to be desired at the offensive end, although his offensive game is improving. So I don't know if Max is just talking about the fact that he digs in on the defensive end and a lot of guys don't. And he's not a complete liability at the offensive end. But I'll tell you what I did like about Smart's game last night. You know, he's handling the – Kemba's not, obviously not out there. He's handling the ball a lot. Zero turnovers.
No, I like him as a point guard.
Yeah, Zippo. I mean, again, none. And he had five steals. Like, you know, so he's involved in a little bit of everything. And he's a good – you know, he fits well in their offense, but he's not a scorer and he shouldn't be.
99-99, 49 seconds left, Marcus Smart with an 18-footer. Now you're down 102-101, Marcus Smart driving layup. You've got Tatum out there. You've got Brown out there. That's the future of your club. I don't know, I just have to keep saying this. I'm in on Marcus Smart. I like it. But this is sort of the same thing we're talking about last week. And all I know is if that first 18-footer bounces out, takes two hops on the rim and then bounces out like it did in Sacramento, and they're bombing away from three and Hield is draining three after three, we come out here the next day and say, what are you doing shooting that ball, Marcus? But just because it bounced in this time, we're not. It's the same story. It's the same deal. So there's that. And again, that draft thing I find fascinating. I asked B-Rob, I emailed B-Rob, his top five, just pure talent, is Siakam 1, Jamal Murray 2. So he would draft Jamal Murray over Jaylen Brown. Ben Simmons 3rd, Jaylen Brown 4th, Brogdon 5th.
Yeah, Brogdon's another one that should get more consideration in that draft.
And again, I don't second guess the teams up top because the whole league passed on Brogdon multiple times. Now, you had three cracks at him. I'll give you a little more scrutiny that you're drafting Gershon Yubiseli. How do you pronounce his first name?
Gershon.
Gershon Yubiseli, the French panda, and Zizic. When you've got Siakam and Brogdon sitting down there. Okay, so
you remember part of the, I mean, I'm not defending it. I'm just, you remember they had to draft Euros to stash him?
Is that what it was?
Yeah, like, but this is not in their defense. What good is it drafting a Euro who sucks?
Okay, I'm just curious, is Jaylen Brown second guess worthy? And it seems borderline to me.
And Brogdon's another one I hold the age thing against because he's also 26. So, I mean, but he can defend, shoots on elite level. I know he's got a bit of an injury thing, but other than that, I don't know. Like, I just see when you guys, you see these guys that are 22, 23, there's upside, like Matt said.
Everyone agrees that I've asked you guys that Hield's defense holds him back.
Yeah, he's slow.
Boy, he can score, though.
He can shoot.
Woo! Isaiah in Boston, give me your thoughts, please.
Yes, you guys are always slandering Marcus Smart for his shot taking and stuff like that. But if you notice the last few games, including the Clipper game, He kept the team inside the game, whether it was offensively or defensively. I get we all want Tatum and Jaylen Brown to get the ball. I'd be staring at the TV saying, Tatum, come get the ball, Tatum, come get the ball. But it's like he don't want it, or he starts crying when he's not getting calls. So the veteran on the team, the long tenure of the team, because Kemba, you don't have Kemba and you don't have Gordon Hayward, he's the one to step up and do it. So I feel like you should give him more credit than you guys are.
Well, Isaiah, I agree with the – yeah, thank you for the call. You make a good point about Tatum not being assertive enough. He's not. I want to go back and watch and see if – there's other things available to Marcus Smart before he shoots, or if they're running some sort of action to get someone open, and they're really not. And Tatum is really sort of passive about the whole thing. It's not like he's, you know,
demanding the ball.
Come get, you know, going to go get it. Because with Marcus, we know, you know, he wants to chuck it. So you almost have to go get it from him. Make yourself available. Make sure he sees you. And Tatum really doesn't.
Or make just a cut to get open.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, Dave, you know, start sprinting and then stop and cut back and get yourself the ball. Make it clear that you want it. So you do see that in Tatum from time to time. I don't think there's any question. The only thing I wonder is whether he knows going down, Marcus isn't giving it to me anyway, so I better just stand here on the wing. But, you know, the thing about Smart, like, this is where fans get it wrong. You know, Smart's this on the defensive end. Oh, great. But you don't want to be the kind of guy that keeps both teams in the game at the same time. Like, and that's what Smart sometimes is on the offensive end. When he gets a little too loose down there, you know, that was an old line they used to have about certain players in the league. There was a guy that played with the Knicks years and years ago, Ray Williams. He said had the unique ability to keep both teams in the game at the same time. Well, you don't want to be one of those. Like, that's no good either.
Bobby in Arlington, what do you got?
Yeah, I think it's a little unfair to second-guess the Jaylen Brown pick. It's not really his fault that he was the eighth option on the team last year with the way that the team was constructed. And then this year, every player healthy, he's maybe the fourth or fifth, depending on what Smart's doing. And then you look at those other guys, they've been the number one or two options on their team since they've been drafted.
Okay, Bobby, fair enough.
Opportunity.
Yeah, it's fair to second-guess everything, FYI.
I mean, that's how I feel, too. I don't agree with his first comment.
So, like, I mean, I think it's especially important for Danny Ainge, who never gets second-guessed. So, I make it, it's like a cause of mine to second-guess, just to keep it real with him. But we've gone through the exercise. I don't think Jaylen Brown, like, okay, so maybe you'd have Jamal Murray ahead of him. No one would have Buddy Hield ahead of Jaylen Brown. And then if you're talking about, you know, whiffing at the draft, you're talking about Siakam or Brogdon, who the whole passed on. So I think that draft pick, as we've gone through the exercise, stands up for the most part. I'm surprised, and not that I could second-guess Danny Ainge for this because he went first overall, but the number of people who still put Simmons up there. You put Simmons up there.
I do. I put Simmons number one.
Oh, that whole Sixers team. Have you paid attention to your Sixers, by the way?
Yep. Didn't Embiid go scoreless last night?
0-11.
Mm-hmm.
0-11.
And Tatum had a 1-18 2 weeks ago. I still want him.
And I think they're like the 5 seed right now in the East. Like, that Philly team, you tease me for like basketball not being my sport, but
I don't tease you for it.
I know enough that you can either shoot the basketball or you can't shoot the basketball, or you know how to play or you don't know how to play. That Sixers team doesn't know how to play. I don't get the hype on the Philadelphia 76ers. They're the 5 seed right now at 11-6.
So I don't love the coach there either. I mean, I'm not telling you I love the coach. Simmons is a potential massive mismatch. Massive. And so I admit, you know, the shooting thing is real. I think he's going to get better at it. I still think he's got the biggest upside of anybody in that draft.
Okay, and Embiid's kind of a puss. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's been evident since day one.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that guy. So last year, they lose on that buzzer beater in Toronto. He cries, which, okay, real men can cry. I'm not criticizing you for that. But now here's their first game back in Toronto. He goes 0-11 from the floor. 0 points. 0 points. In fact, how did Stephen A. I was watching this the other day. How did Stephen A. react to that, Billy? Do you have that?
First things first, to Joel Embiid. To Joel Embiid. What the hell was that? 32 minutes and 0 points? Zero? What the hell was that? Mind you, Max Kellerman, Molly, the last time we saw Joel in a playoff game, where did we see him? It was Toronto. What was he doing? Crying. I come on the air, and what do I say to you, Max? This is a beautiful thing. because it hurts him now. He's going to come out like a monster this year because he was crying. He was upset. You're in the hallway hugging your lady. Everybody looking at you like, damn, man up. We brought up Tom Hanks in the league of their own. And there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in basketball. But we let it go. 32 minutes in your first visit back to Toronto since that moment that Kawhi Leonard broke your heart and sent you home, and you put up zero, really?
Okay, you can just stop it there. He goes on for like 2 minutes on that. That Sixers team, I'm sorry. I don't see it. I've never seen it. It's stunning. They went to the end of fourth quarter in Game 7 against Toronto. I don't know how they did it. I know how they did it. Jimmy Butler is how they did it. But Horford's not going to be enough to save that group. I'm sorry.
Look, they got motivational issues. What do you want me to tell you? There's still a lot of talent there. And so in a playoff series, I don't know if I'm going to play that team. I don't.
Bring them on. Oh, bring on that team.
Celtics would have a hard time with that team.
Five or six games.
Hard time.
All right, so we continue. Maybe I'll give you a little quick Bruins minute as well. Coming up right after this, Murray, an update first.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Krug will walk it ahead. Nobody even around him. Now cuts over the line. High slot. Dunks down the middle. Into the slot. Backhand. He's going on.
Thank God that happened because you knew they were losing in the shootout.
I thought the same thing. I said the same thing. Oh, it's a good thing you won it in overtime.
So if you're watching Saturday night, that was quite a humdinger. Bruins down two goals, pull the goalie, score twice with the goalie out, then win in overtime on that end-to-end rush by Torrey Krug, where for some reason the Minnesota Wild opened up the seas like Moses.
I mean, really unbelievable. They let him just skate right down the middle of the ice.
So they'll take it. I have a hard time figuring out whether the Bruins are just sort of fool's gold here. They're getting outplayed most nights, but pulling out wins and points, and that's going to catch up to them. Or is it the sign of a good team? They just know how to win, and, you know, they have, even on their bad nights, they pull out points because they know how to win, and that's a good thing. It's one of those two.
Yeah, can it be a little of both?
I guess.
I mean, I think what you have is a veteran team that knows that when they turn it on, they go to a level that most of their opponents can't.
I was really ready to second-guess Cassidy. I thought he made a mistake at the end of that game. So you're down two goals, was it 4-2, and you pull the goalie for the extra skater, and Krejci scores on a really great pass from Bergeron at the top of the crease. So that makes it a one-goal game. Then you draw a penalty with 90 seconds left. I think it was 1:30 left. So you draw the penalty, you're on the power play, and you have an offensive zone face-off. So you're 5-on-4. You don't need to pull the goalie, right? Cassidy pulled the goalie, pulled Rask. I said, no. Because one clear, now the ball game's over. You've got your man advantage. And you have the best power play in the league. Why are you risking an empty net goal here? You know, if there's 30 seconds left, then maybe I see it. Okay. If there's 15, 20 seconds left, no brainer. 30 seconds left. Okay. 1:30? And you have the best power. And I don't know if they rank number one, but, you know, work with
one of the best.
They have one of the best power plays in the league. It's been deadly. You don't pull your goalie there. And he pulled it. He yanked it, all right. He pulled it 6-on-4, and they scored. So shuts me up.
I didn't mind it.
I didn't like it.
I like the idea of then you really load up on him. Now you get 6-on-4. And again, and Krejci absolutely cranked one from that faceoff circle and blasted it home. So, like, you know, now it's like the second unit. When Pasternak sent out there, they get Krejci over on that side doing the same thing. So, they got lucky.
I didn't like the risk.
But you need the goal. I mean, you know, like, you need the goal. To me, the 6-on-4 is hard to defend. Oh, it's hard to defend. Now they get two more guys than you? Like, now what? Like, I feel like when that happens, the D is screwed.
Okay.
Screwed.
So what can I tell you? He had the right call on that. Tonight, they're back at it in Montreal here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. They're playing the first of back-to-back. You're in Ottawa tomorrow night, and guess who's starting in net tonight in Montreal?
The right goalie.
Not Tuca. Not Poopy Pants.
Yarrow.
So Halak gets the Canes, which he should. Rask, again, has had a real up-and-down career against the Montreal Canadiens. Feels like we're back on a down downward trajectory with Rask in Montreal. His last appearance there earlier this year sucked.
And prior to that, it was all right. But after that last one, if I'm Cassidy, I say, okay, I know what I'm doing here. I'm going to Halak. I know this guy's probably not going to pee his pants at the sight of being back in Montreal.
So I like this too. Halak in Montreal, give Rask tomorrow night in Ottawa. That's one thing to keep an eye on. The other is that Bergeron's out, and so they're bringing up Stanika, who's one of their young guys who they're sort of banking on to be the next wave of kids. Offensively talented center. What's interesting is that they're going to have him skate on the second list. So Krejci moves up with the erections with Pasternak and Marchand. So Krejci's up there with that line.
That's the wood line.
And then they're keeping Coyle on the right side on the second line with DeBrusk. So it's Stanika with Coyle on the right. So they are insistent. And I wonder about this. Is this a precursor to them doing absolutely nothing at the deadline? We can't afford a Marcus Johansson move this year because they're so tight up against the cap that we may not be able to make a move this year. So, Charlie, you better get used to that right side next to David Krejci, or that right side on the second line, because that's where you're going to be. You're not playing center.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, it could be that. Like, that would worry me if that's what they're doing. In the case of tonight, singularly tonight, he had a kid playing his first NHL game. I don't mind having a couple of, or at least one veteran guy there who especially can, handle the puck and prevent people from getting the puck. Like, so it helps Stanek out a little bit to give him, sort of someone stable.
It's interesting. It's his first NHL game, right?
It is.
Yeah.
In Montreal, second line.
Yep.
Like, right into it, buddy.
Oh, yeah. No, they're throwing him right. He's been hot. I think he's got 16 points in his last 18 games or something, 17, 18 points for the year. So he's been hot. He's been scoring. Apparently, he's been playing some on the penalty kill. But they're worried about his size. He's just not that sturdy. So you're going to get pushed around, but he's 6'1". He's not Donato out there either.
Okay, so there's your hockey minute.
I want to see this kid play tonight.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to see him play.
All right, so there you go. There's a Bruins minute for you. Back to the Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Celtic stuff, Lamar Jackson, and the NFL. We'll reset those thoughts as well. It's our long commercial-free segment next, and we get it right back with your phones after this.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mez, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones as promised. The Marcus Smart problem worked out last night because the ball dribbled in. That was the same thing as last week. Dave in the car, your thoughts.
Felger, you're a big scoreboard guy, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, what do you think average three-point shooting is in the NBA?
Oh, 32%, 35%.
Okay, so over the last 96 games, that's a year plus this year, he's taken 457 and he's made 164, right? That's 35.8. So I'm going to just keep it simple for you. True or false? Over that span, Marcus Smart is an above-average NBA three-point shooter.
Well, we didn't establish what the NBA average is. But he's right there. Yeah, he's right there.
Yeah. All right, so what is the big deal with him shoot? Like, I get it. He should not be taking James Harden step-back threes. But when he gets the ball in rhythm and his feet are set and he takes good shots, he's a good shooter. And here's the thing. Okay. He's always been a good playmaker, but this year he's doing it at an elite level. All right, the number one assisted turnover the last 10 years is Chris Paul in 13 at 4.5 a game. Marcus is at over 5 this year. He's got 82 assists and 16 turnovers. So when first of all, if you watch his team, you should have confidence with him on offense when he has the ball in his hands. And when you're making plays and you're getting in the paint, you have to make decisions. If you draw coverage, you have to pass the ball, and he does that. But when he thinks he has a mismatch, he's going to shoot it. That's basketball. I don't understand what the problem is. He's averaging almost 13-5 this year. Like, eventually you guys need to get this information, this new information, and have a change your opinions on it.
Dave, I have all the information. The point is, when Tatum's on the floor or Brown's on the floor or Kemba Walker's on the floor, your offensive players that you've built around and drafted and paid and all that, or Gordon Hayward's on the floor. Marcus Smart's three-point percentage versus the league and all that, I mean, does that matter?
No, see, he's missing the point. It's about better options.
What's his role?
Yeah, it's about having better options. That's what he's missing. Now, look, the one thing he has going in his favor now is that there's no Hayward, there's no Walker.
Tatum's standing there, though.
Okay, so, Tatum is standing there. So I would rather have Tatum shoot two, depending on the matchup. Because sometimes I feel like Tatum forces it too. Like, you know, but even like last night, he didn't get off a great shot. Independent of how it ended up, it was contested highly. And so now I'm not defending Smart. I also think the caller's wrong about Smart. The NBA average has gone up a little bit.
So what is it?
It's at least 35 or somewhere. It might be 35, 36. So I would put him in the average category. You want the game decided by an average shooter?
There you go.
Because I don't.
We've got Sean in Merrimack with an NHL thought. Go, Sean.
Hey, Mike. Just a quick thought. We're going to Montreal tonight, so I expect at least one goal taken off the board. I just wanted your thoughts on this review thing. And I'm going to use an analogy, so Tony, jump in because it's a baseball one. In football, something goes wrong, it's the next play. In basketball, something goes wrong, it's the next play. In hockey, you can stay in the zone for 3 minutes, cherry pick if it's a goal, whether you're going to review it or not. So my analogy with baseball, Mass, is down the road, are we going to have a 2-2 count with a close call on ball three? Next pitch, guy hits a home run, and we go back and review ball three and said it's a strikeout and take the home run off the board?
It's asinine, Sean. I've done the rant 4 million times. I'm not going to do it again. It's completely asinine. You just don't need to worry about the Montreal thing. They go to Toronto or they go to New York for the review. It's not Jacques Lamacq is not up there in the top row deciding the game on the replay. It goes to Toronto or New York. It doesn't go to a French Canadian national, a Quebecois sitting up in the press box deciding your fate.
It's the guys on the ice you got to worry about.
Well, those, yeah, for sure. We've got Devin in Kingsborough on the Celts. Hi, Devin.
Hey, Felger, what's going on?
What do you got?
Well, I just agree with you about Ainge because, you know, I used to be a pretty big green teamer, but in 2011 when he traded Perkins for Nenad Krstić, I think that's how you say his name, I just feel like he doesn't understand or doesn't have a good pulse of the chemistry on the team. He traded away Perkins, and that was, he kind of destroyed the team. And I think it was evident last year with the team chemistry and how bad it was that he doesn't really know what he's doing all the time, but he gets a ton of credit because, well, I don't know, he won championships with the Celtics.
Devin, he knows what he's doing. And I'm sorry to cut you off. And he's just crushed some trades, which everyone just gives him deference for, which he deserves. I just think he doesn't get scrutinized like other GMs in town. And I think he should be. I don't know why he'd be absolved from second guessing and going back and looking at drafts or moves to say that worked or didn't work. I mean, if any other GM in town destroyed a team's development and chemistry by bringing in an a-hole like Kyrie Irving, we'd kill them for it. We'd kill every single other GM in town for bringing in a guy like Kyrie Irving to set you back. Except Danny gets celebrated for it. And I fight against that. But I think he's an excellent GM and will be the answer versus the problem. I just think he deserves that scrutiny like anybody else does.
So. And apparently, in the last day or so, he's taking blame for the mix of last year, right?
Good, he should.
He did an interview, I think, with Rachel Nichols. What's the name of that show she does on ESPN?
The Jump.
Baby. Yeah, and he says, I think in hindsight, I wish I would have cleaned out the roster a little bit to make it easier for Brad. We had a deep roster. We were built for a longer run, but we had a lot of young guys who had a lot of success without Gordon and Kyrie. And the young guys that had success without those two guys felt like it was their time for the spotlight, and it just didn't mesh. I'm the one who should be blamed for last year. We put a team together that just didn't have the pieces that didn't fit. We had a lot of talent, a lot of expectations, but it's certainly not Kyrie's fault. Now, look, I don't know if he's going out of his way there just to take Kyrie off the hook, but the criticism of too many players, I think, is one that just about everybody has had.
I can understand, because of the talent, why you still ride with Kyrie, but he should have traded Terry Rozier. That was the main one. Like, Rozier should have been out the door at the trade deadline.
Yeah, or Marcus Morris even, right? Yeah. Like, and Morris was harder because he was playing well. Rozier sucked all year. Now, look, I suppose you could say that ultimately Rozier, on some level, that it helped get them Kemba, but not really, right? Because they would have renounced him anyway, yeah, and it would have cleared the space. So, you know, Rozier should have been an easy one. They had too many guys.
So, here's the thing with Kyrie, though. Like, I got this email from Ben. Teams' records without Kyrie, okay? The Celtics in 2018-19 without Kyrie went 12-3. The Celtics in 2019-2020, last year, went 12-4. The Nets are now 5-1 without Kyrie Irving since he went down. They're 5-1 since he got hurt.
It's amazing.
If that existed on any other team in town, You know what we would say? Can you believe Belichick gave up a lottery pick for that? Can you believe Don Sweeney, that idiot, gave up a lottery pick for that? Never mind with the Red Sox. You know, can you believe Dave Dombrowski gave up what he gave up and spent what he spent to bring in a guy like that to kill your team? But Danny Ainge is like, whee, great move. We do it again. So you know me. I'm still stuck on that thing. But I think it applies across the board. I think he just should be second-guessed like any other GM in town.
So is your issue with him or with the media?
It's the media.
It's the treatment of him.
And I'll never come around on this, Mike, because of the guy's talent, it puts everyone in a trance. I can understand why they did it, and I would do it again, because you hope for the best. It didn't work out because he's a raging a-hole. But he's so talented that he wouldn't be alone in the NBA being a GM and looking at Kyrie Irving and said, I'll take a shot. What the Nets just did.
Right. He'd be another GM that made a really bad mistake, who misevaluated the situation. There's a lot of those out there. He'd just be another one of those guys. That's all. So again, the last 3 years without Kyrie, the teams are 24, 29.
It's like 29-5.
29-8. When Kyrie gets hurt, the teams are 29-8 without him. And you, unlike everybody else, actually gave up something to get him. But no, he does everything right. So we continue with that. We can do with everything else. We'll reset our Lamar Jackson thoughts as well after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Is your workplace still using 5-gallon plastic jugs for your water service? Hey, it's Joe Murray. Listen up, because I'm here with Matt from Clear Tide.
Thanks, Joe. With Clear Tide, you can say goodbye to heavy lifting, missed deliveries, bottle storage, and worrying about how much bacteria might be living in your bottled cooler, and say hello to purified, endless refreshment all for one flat monthly rate.
What are you waiting for? Visit BottleFreeBoston.com to start drinking more and spending less at your office. That's BottleFreeBoston.com, and make sure to tell Matt and the Clear Tide team that Joe Murray sent you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using the promo code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.